Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. It is Friday. We appreciate your joining us. Tonight's Mike Malloy program is sponsored by Liberty One Radio. Liberty One, O-N-E, Radio. If you want to hear this program on the air in San Diego, visit LibertyOneRadio.com and support Liberty One Radio. It is the voice of freedom in San Diego. Liberty One Radio. Yay! How about these damn socialists? Have you noticed? They come out of the woodwork every year, just about this time. Most other times of the year, they hide. They hide in the general population. It's difficult to tell them apart from normal people, the socialists. They're very insidious. Some of them are old. Some of them are young. Race makes no difference. They're socialists. And the way you can spot them this time of year all over the country, there are these things called canathons. Do you know what I'm talking about? Canathon? Some TV station or religious group or group of humanists or somebody, Boy Scouts, fire department, they decide to sponsor a canathon designed to help people who desperately need the help for food, primarily food, because by then most of them have lost their homes or they're in the process of losing their home. As far as clothing is concerned, well, you know, they can always traipse on over to the Goodwill store and get some blue jeans for 50 cents a pair and so on. No, this is more about food. It's canathons. Have you seen it? Canathons? I think, and I'm sure you, gentle listener, will agree with this in the same spirit with which I'm saying it, that the teabaggers should stand up and put a stop to this. Come on. This is pure socialism. It may be worse than socialism. From each according to his ability, to each according to his need. Who said that before? That is awful. That is awful. That's horrible. Canathons. And the children. Have you noticed this? Do you have these things, these horrible examples of socialism, possibly communism in your town, your city? Have you? I mean, you know, it looks so innocent, doesn't it? Huh? You got a bunch of hungry people, unemployed, got no money, got no savings, got no home, got nothing. Because the capitalists in this country have taken everything they ever thought they would have, including their dreams. So what's left? Canathon, socialism. Oh, my God. I wish somebody would do something. And the children, the precious capitalist children who are watching this. Jesus, some of them even bring cans. They take cans of food to their elementary school. Oh, my God. The same school where God has been driven out. Kids aren't allowed to pray. But they're ensnared, these little youngsters, in socialism. Bring some cans of food, kiddies. So insidious. Who's the food for? Exalted principle. Who's the food for? It's for people who can't find food on their own. They can't afford it. But are you sure we should do this? That sounds like social. Be quiet now, little girl. Go home and get some cans of food. Okay. That's how it starts. What sort of an example is being sent to the children with this canathon chicken crap, as Boner calls all considerations for the poor, the unemployed, the desperate? You know, John Boner, tan man. He's allowing this. Sarah Palin is allowing this. Canathons. Well, I swear to God, what's this country coming to next? I've never seen such socialism, such absolute despicable. It is despicable. Children go home and prevail upon their parents.
Mommy, I need some food for the people that don't have any.
What? What? That's socialism. And you know who started this? You know who started this crap? In this country with these huge bins and the semis pulling up and the TV reporters. You know who started that usually? These do-gooders. And we know about do-gooders, don't they? First thing they do is have a canathon, and the next thing they want to do is have unemployment benefits for people who can't find work through no fault. And then you know what happens when they have unemployment benefits. Well, they just don't want to work anymore. Canathon? And what happens after the Canathon campaign is over, huh? What happens then? After all this socialist food is distributed, then what? I'll tell you then what. Then the ungrateful dregs want more. You feed these people once because you're feeling all gooey about Christmas, for heaven's sake. Christmas is not about feeding people with canathons. Christmas is about buying stuff, getting things and sales. They perverted is what they've done with these canathons. And you know what's even worse? Toys for Tots. Oh, my God. Toys for undeserving little children. You know it's a deserving children? One that has parents that are working. Toys for Tots. Socialism. Every place you turn around, canathons, toys for tots. Funds to help pay the heating bills of these old bastards that can't pay for their own heat. Socialism! Where's Glenn Beck? God damn it, Glenn! Make this quit! Sarah! Sarah! Canathons. Toys for tots. Heating bill assistance. They're undermining this country with this nonsense. Somebody can't afford food. Well, then you starve. Get a job. Like me, for example. I pulled myself up by my own bootstraps. Never had anybody give me nothing. Canathons my ass. And all because of this perversion of Christmas. We know what Christmas is all about. Christmas is all about getting off your butt and getting out there and shop. Buy stuff. You think the three kings, when they brought their gifts, you think they got those gifts from a canathon? They didn't. They went to Walmart and bought it. Republicans, baby, I can't stand those Republicans. Fight the Republican Party. The joke is too high. They feel no obligation. They put their faith and trust in God and corporations. They stand for piety. A dozen supper rivals. They're waving
Mike Malloy.
Past the hour, Howard Kurtz interviewed Dan Bartlett, Bush's former communications director. It's over at Daily Beast if you want to check it out. And as Kurtz points out in his article, Bush set a trap 9 years ago, and the Democrats are still trying to get themselves out of that trap. Yesterday, in a largely symbolic vote designed to score political points, that's the only good it served. We're talking about Democrats here. The House voted to extend the Bush tax cuts for 98% of Americans. 98%. And Harry Reid plans to follow suit with a similar Senate vote. But that didn't matter. It doesn't matter. The Democratic move, as Kurtz puts it, will vanish into Senate quicksand. Infuriated Republicans! What did Boehner say? Chicken crap! And it triggered a round of nastiness from these swine that made those pledges of cooperation at Obama's sit-down with GOP leaders this week seem like... Yeah, like a distant memory. Kurtz writes, but in Washington, where anything beyond last week's news cycle is considered ancient history, the jury-rigged nature of the Bush plan and the fiscal sleight of hand involved has been all but forgotten. Dan Bartlett, Bush's former communications director, says this, quote, "We knew that politically, once you got those tax cuts into law, it becomes almost impossible to remove them." That's not a bad legacy. The fact that we were able to lay the trap does feel pretty good, to tell you the truth. End quote. It's a lengthy article. I'm not going to bore you with I don't particularly care for Kurtz, as a matter of fact. But for Bush's former communications director, Dan Bartlett, to just come around and say it. Boy, it took 9 years and several months, but boy, did we stick it to those Democratic sons of bitches. We sure did. Ah, how about that? We set a trap. Man, does feel pretty good. People in this country are swirling closer and closer to the drain. And this filthy Republican says something like that. I mean, who cares, right? Who cares what this filthy Republican says? They're all over the place. They're all over. Republicans are just showing their utter contempt. Utter, complete, and total contempt for unemployed people, middle-class people, want-to-be-working people. Remember all the talk about the death panels? Remember who started that? Was that that crazy psychopath Michelle Bachmann, or was it the crazier psychopath Sarah Palin? Yeah, I can see the White House from my multi-million-dollar car. That means I'm going to be president. Who was it started the death panels, and then? Media picked up on it, of course, in this country, being the slobs that media outlets are. Everybody from the Rupert Murdoch anti-American terrorist network, funded in part by the Saudi royal family that also funds the madrasas that sends American soldiers, the graduates of the madrasas send American soldiers into permanent rehab or suicide, hundreds, thousands of American soldiers dead. And Rupert Murdoch has no problem with that, of course, because Rupert Murdoch is a fascist son of a bitch. He doesn't care. But remember, death panels, said the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization and all the little twits that work therein. And then the rest of the media picked up on it, too. All over the place. MSNBC, CNN. Didn't make any difference. Every place you turn. Remember? Death panels. Death panels. Death panels. If the Obama health insurance reform went through. Death panels here and death panels there, and they're going to take your grandma and squeeze her guts out, and they're going to cut off everything, and they're going to just death panels. Remember? Remember? Sure you do. Remember? Huh? Am I irritating you right now? Death panels. That's all you heard. Remember back? When was it? 10 months ago, 20 months ago, 18 months ago, 13 months ago, 14 months ago, death panels. Remember? Well, guess what? They're here. We'll talk about it when we come back from this break. Death panels.
Come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. So the death panels. That's all. I got so tired of hearing that phrase, especially the idiocy of it and the absolute brain dead nature of the people who paid any attention to that kind of nonsense. Death panels. Well, guess what? Effective at the beginning of October, just passed, Arizona stopped financing certain transplant operations under the state's version of Medicaid. Many doctors in Arizona say the decision amounts to a death sentence for some low-income patients who have little chance of survival without transplants and lack the hundreds of thousands of dollars needed to pay for them. Dr. Rainier Grusiner, a transplant specialist at the University of Arizona College of Medicine, said, quote, "The most difficult discussions are those that involve patients who had been on the donor list for a year or more, and now we have to tell them they're not on the list anymore. The frustration is tremendous. It's more than frustration." End quote. Patients who were on the donor list for a year or more and now have fallen prey to Jan Brewer, the Republican governor of Arizona's death panels. Only Jan Brewer will not make the announcement to the people who have now been condemned to death. She stays wherever she stays in her twisted world and says nothing. And it's up to the specialists that were handling the patients to pass on the bad news. Jennifer Carosetta, the chief legislative liaison at the Arizona State Medicaid Agency, says, quote, "As an agency, we understand there have been difficult cuts, and there will have to be more difficult cuts looking forward." End quote. State Senator Leah Landrum Taylor, a Democrat, said, quote, "We made it very clear at the time of the vote to do this with Medicaid, that this was a death sentence. This is not a luxury item, transplants. We're not talking about cosmetic surgery. End quote. Okay. There you have it. Now, some of you Republicans who voted for all of this, remember, 25-cent radio talk show hosts like moi said this was going to happen. You're going to vote in these Republicans. I don't care if it's in Arizona or if it's in Texas or if it's in Washington, D.C. Vote them in. They are going to kill you. Forget death panels. You know, what kind of playground nonsense is that, huh? What kind of six-year-old horse crap or chicken crap, as John Boehner calls it, is that? Here's the real world. After all, people are on Medicaid. They probably don't even vote. I mean, you know, probably most of them are in wheelchairs and stuff, you know. They probably can't even get out to the polling place, and they're poor. Oh, God, poor people. Medicaid. Well, there you have it. There's not too much I can elaborate on about Jan Brewer's death panels, except to say that, you know, Arizona today, more states tomorrow. This is what you wanted. This is what you've got. Nigeria will file charges against Dick Cheney and officials from five foreign companies, including Halliburton, over a $180 million bribery scandal. That's according to a prosecutor at the anti-graft agency in Nigeria. This is according to Bloomberg. Indictments will be lodged in a Nigerian court in the next 3 days. According to Godwin Obla, prosecuting counsel at the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, he said this in an interview today in his office in Abuja, the capital of Nigeria. An arrest warrant for Cheney, quote, will be issued and transmitted through Interpol, end quote, the world's largest, biggest police organization. Peter Long, Cheney's spokesman, said he couldn't immediately comment when contacted today and said he would respond later to an email request for comment. Send me an email, Bloomberg. So, Dick Cheney and Julian Assange, who do you think they'll find first? Do you think they'll find the mass murderer and committer of bribery, fraud, theft, torture? You think they'll find Cheney first, or do you think they'll find Julian Assange, who has been accused somewhere, Sweden, of sexual misconduct? Rape? Has it rape? Do they make it rape? Nigeria. Who'd have thunk it? Too bad it wasn't Kenya. Wouldn't that have been poetic? James in Seattle writes, Mike, could you ever imagine any member, present administration, or the past administration, Bush, going after that guy, I think his name was Osama bin Laden or something like that, with all the energy and extraordinary and expensive resources they're wasting going after WikiLeaks' Julian Assange? A suitable question, James writes, for the entire citizenry to ponder. No, Osama bin Laden remains the capitalists, the ruling class. It's their Goldstein. Goldstein, the one who was trying so desperately to murder Big Brother. By the way, speaking of Julian Assange, this is from the Sydney Morning Herald in Sydney, Australia. Headline is really cool. Police close in on Assange. Julian Assange is at risk of being arrested in Britain and extradited to Sweden to face possible rape charges. At the same time as the Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, added her voice to an international call to prosecute WikiLeaks. That would be the Prime Minister of Australia. Ms. Gillard said, quote, I absolutely condemn the placement of this information on the WikiLeaks website. It is a grossly irresponsible thing to do and an illegal thing to do, end quote. A British newspaper said police could not act as Sweden had filled out a European arrest warrant incorrectly. The people who need to know where Julian Assange is. He is in a house in southeast England waiting for the British police to arrest him. He was accused of the sexual assault of two Swedish women in August. And he has yet to be charged with any offense. Assange, of course, has denied the charges. He was allowed to leave Sweden that month, August, even though the complaint had been filed. And the director of prosecutions, Marianne Nye, sought an international warrant to force him to return to Stockholm for questioning. The Swedish Supreme Court said last night it would not consider Mr. Assange's appeal against the arrest warrant. The move has been condemned by Assange's British lawyers, who have labeled it political. In London, a WikiLeaks spokesman, Kristen Rafnsson, I can't pronounce it, H-R-A-F-N-S-S-O-N. My God, what is that? Nine letters and only two vowels? I just can't pronounce it. Anyway, a spokesman in London challenged claims by U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton that WikiLeaks and Mr. Assange were responsible for, quote, an attack on the international community, end quote. Kristen said, quote, there has been a lot of talk about legal actions, but we have not seen any reference to how we are supposed to have broken the law. Good point. Good point. And WikiLeaks is struggling to stay online now after so many internet servers are withdrawing their service to the WikiLeaks website. An American provider of internet domain names withdrew its service yesterday after a barrage of attacks by hackers threatened to destabilize its entire system. By Friday, today, WikiLeaks was pointing users to web addresses in a number of European countries, including Switzerland, Germany, Finland, and the Netherlands. Yada, yada, yada. WikiLeaks appears increasingly engaged in a kind of digital whack-a-mole as it struggles to stay online. We'll be right back.
America, one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, the program tonight is sponsored by Liberty One Radio. If you want to hear this program on the air in San Diego, visit Liberty One, O-N-E, libertyoneradio.com and support them. Liberty One Radio, the voice of freedom in San Diego. libertyoneradio.com. Check them out, okay? Check them out. Yeah, Michael Wrightson reminds me of a statement in 1984. In times of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes a revolutionary act. Yeah, absolutely. It's astonishing to me how so much in the novel 1984 is playing out over the past 25, 30 years right before our eyes, if we want to watch, if we're inclined to pay attention to what's going on in the United States, not exclusively, but other places do, but we're concerned about here, us, ours, right? In times of universal deceit, is that not what WikiLeaks releases have shown? Universal deceit. Everything, a lie regarding what is fed to the American public and the publics of other countries, when compared to the knowledge of the diplomatic corps, total deceit. The statements about Karzai that are starting to come out now, our puppet in Afghanistan, the entire government of Afghanistan. This is what our people are dying for over there. This is why we're killing people over there. The entire government of Afghanistan is corrupt, totally. I think the Minister of Agriculture is the only one who is not, or maybe he is, or they just haven't found out, whatever. But the entire government, every single minister, up to and including Karzai, they're all corrupt, filthy, stealing everything they can get their goddamn hands on. And we send people over there to shoot and be shot, to be blown up and to blow up, to be killed and to kill. This is insane. It really is. Obama, like Bush before him, is crazy, just crazy, to keep this going. I mean, it's a different kind of sickness. Bush was just a goddamn sociopath. But Obama seems unwilling to exist in any kind of reality. What is he doing? What is he doing, Obama? In times of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes a revolutionary act. Yeah. Oh, and WikiLeaks, like I mentioned, the web infrastructure that supports WikiLeaks is deliberately diffused and difficult to track. Servers are spread through many countries in order to protect the site from hostile states or companies. But the cyber attacks on domain name providers, see? That's how it works. Digital traffic cops that direct web users to internet sites. And problems with the companies who physically host its data on servers, including the diplomatic cables, have kept WikiLeaks site and the founder Julian Assange moving. Can you believe this? Can you believe the howling and screaming around the globe by the ruling class of just about every country that WikiLeaks has exposed, whose chicanery and duplicity and lies and deceit WikiLeaks has exposed? The screaming and howling and maddened frothing of the mouth of all these governments, all the people. How soon do you think it'll be before Julian Assange has a car accident or a plane crash or a couple of Russians track him down, or like the Israelis pulled off, what was it, about a year ago, when something like 30 people were involved in assassinating somebody that the Israelis wanted dead, traveling on Australian passports, English passports, German passports. How soon before Assange is murdered? Seriously, how soon do you think? I am absolutely positive that money is being placed on that particular event. Bets are being taken. Police close in on Assange. He's an Australian, of course, and that was the headline in Sydney Morning Herald. Ooh. Run, Julian, run. The newest round of tidbits from the WikiLeaks cables highlights corruption at every level of government and society in Afghanistan. That's what CNN reports. Cables from the U.S. ambassador in Kabul question Afghan President Hamid Karzai's, quote, inability to grasp the most rudimentary principles of state building, end quote. Right. 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 The U.S. government, according to Democracy Now!, has released a warning to its staff members and students working across America with regards to looking at or commenting on government data. State Department staffers have been barred from reading the leaked cables because the documents are classified, while students have been told that posting or commenting on links to the documents on social media sites, quote, could call into question your ability to deal with confidential information, which is part of most positions with the federal government, end quote. So if you read it or comment on it, your ass is fired, or worse. We'll be right back. Podcast trivia, like right away. If you want to take a shot at this, give us a call. 877-996-2556. As soon as we have some contenders on the line, we will go ahead and do it. If you win, you get a one-year subscription to Molloy Show podcast downloads, commercial-free. And again, tonight's Mike Molloy program is sponsored in toto by Liberty One Radio. If you want to hear this program on the air in San Diego, visit LibertyOneRadio.com, Liberty One, O-N-E, LibertyOneRadio.com, and support Liberty One Radio, the voice of freedom in San Diego. Somehow the Republicans screwed up, and Congress has approved the child nutrition bill. The Senate already had, and yesterday the House gave its final approval to a child nutrition bill that expands the school lunch program and sets standards to improve the quality of school meals with more fruits and vegetables. And it was the more fruits and vegetables that just drove Sarah Palin just into a tizzy, didn't it? And all these right-wing son of a bitches who are standing around saying, well, now who's supposed to tell your kid what he's supposed to eat? You or the government? Nobody is telling a kid what to eat. You see, this is what they always do. Just like these right-wing bastards that say prayer has been driven out of the schools. No, it hasn't. Anyone who wants to go into a school and pray can do so. I can do it if I want to. Any child in any public school in America can pray anytime the little booger decides to pray. That was never taken out of the schools. The nutrition program that was passed by the House and the Senate does not say, send your child here so we can force feed him. Force feeding is what we did to prisoners in Guantanamo so we could keep them alive so we could then torture them. What the school nutrition program says is simply, here are the meals we're going to offer. If you don't like it, Sarah Palin, send your kid to school with his bacon and cookie sandwiches and shut your goddamn mouth. Huh? The vote was 264 to 157 in the House. And the Senate was approved by unanimous consent back in August. Now, get this. On the final roll call on this bill, four Democrats and 153 Republicans voted no. No on childhood nutrition. No. 17 Republicans lost their way or pushed the wrong button and wound up voting yes. 17. Oh, are they going to have their a good case of the red ass handed to them? Huh? You voted for it! And as anyone with the sense God gave or nature gave or somebody gave or something gave, the average human, school meal programs have a major impact on the nation's health. Supporters of this bill said it could reduce the prevalence of obesity in young children. And the fact is the lunch program feeds more than 31 million children a day. In some instances, the only meal a child gets, son of a bitch, this is in the United States, is what the little boy or the little girl gets at school. And 153 Republicans voted no. No food. I don't care how they spin it, the scum bastards. What they were saying, no food. For the first time in more than three decades, the bill would increase federal reimbursement for school lunches beyond inflation, okay, to help cover the cost of higher quality meals. It would also allow more than 100,000 children on Medicaid to qualify automatically for free school meals. The bill gives the Secretary of Agriculture authority to establish nutrition standards for food sold in schools during the school day. Oh, no! Oh, no! Really? The standards would require schools to serve more fruits and vegetables, whole grains, and low-fat dairy products. The last time I can remember getting my bloomers in a wad about the school lunch programs was back when Ronald Reagan tried to have, or his Secretary of Agriculture, or somebody in the Reagan administration tried to have ketchup declared a vegetable. Christ. Well, we shouldn't be doing this, you see, because we're so far in debt. Oh, and by the way, about half of the cost, this is going to cost $4.5 billion. What is it, a week of our murder machines operating around the world? $4.5 billion, and the cost is financed, about half the cost is financed by a cut in food stamps. The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. A cut in food stamps starting in several years. Isn't that nice? That's what they had to do. That's what this cowardly, disgusting, Democratic Obama administration agreed to do. Okay, Boner. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll pay for half of it by cutting food stamps 4 years from now. How's that? All right. Well, I kind of like that. All right. I'm having a tanning machine put in here. Right next to the pile of chicken crap that you guys came up with the other day and trying to pass something for tax cuts or tax increases. It's not tax cuts, it's increases. Let's play trivia. Ed is in Providence, Rhode Island. Hey, Ed. Ed?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you.
You're having a good show tonight.
Well, thank you. You ready to play trivia?
I am.
Okay. Here we go. Got some music? Which notable teabagger made news this week on a weekly radio show by suggesting that millions of Americans who rent their residences be disenfranchised, can no longer vote, because only property owners should be allowed to vote. Was it A, Senator-elect from Kentucky Rand Paul, B, Tea Party Nation founder Judson Phillips, C, teabagger darling Sarah Palin, or D, Alaska teabagger and failed Senate nominee Joe Miller? Who said that only property owners should be able to vote?
We got to go with Rand Paul.
Oh, darn, it wasn't Rand Paul. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
No, it was Judson Phillips, the founder of Tea Party Nation. And he said the founder...
I admit that I don't really, you know, put a lot of stock to anything that they say, so if I missed out on something a Tea Party person said, I don't sleep. I sleep well at night anyway. So
well, that's I hear you. What else did you want? Well, I'll tell you what, Ed. I know you want to talk about something else. Hold on a second. I'm going to put you on hold. We're going to do a break, and then we'll come back and chat.
Okay.
We'll chat for a moment, and then we will move on to our next trivia player and see if you can win a 1 year commercial-free podcast download to the Molloy program. All right? It should be easy. I thought that one was easy, but see, what happens here when we come up with these questions, the name Judson Phillips now is forever etched into my brain, right up there with other people who advocate a return to slavery. That's what he was saying. So anyway, all right, we'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. It's time once again for podcast trivia here on the Molloy program. Since Ed didn't quite make the cut, we now have Barbara. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good. How are you?
Fair to partly cloudy. You know how this works. You know how this works, right? I'll ask
you
a question.
I do.
You have multiple choice. You get the right answer. You get a 1 year subscription to commercial-free podcast downloads. All right, here you go. A group of Christian crazy people has erected around the country signs, big billboards, saying a very significant day is coming in May of 2011. That's next May. Is that day A, the day of the rapture, B, the day of the locust, C, the day Walmart ceases business, or D, the day John Boner turns white again?
It's A, the day of the rapture.
That's right!
Yay!
All right. This is just overwhelming to me. You have actually won.
I know. Right. I played before and I didn't win.
Well, see, at first you don't succeed, either to hell with it or try again.
Right.
All right. If you'll stay on the line, Barbara, Kathy will get the pertinent information. Congratulations, really. I'm glad you won. Take care. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Okay, hold on. See how easy it is. All right, now, we were talking with Ed in Providence, and the first thing Ed's going to say is, well, my question wasn't that easy.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, sometimes...
You just gave the answer way earlier. I just heard it on the news that they were talking about that.
Yeah, well, sometimes you get the easy question, Ed. Sometimes you get the white knuckler. But that's all right. You'll get another chance.
That's all right. I don't mind being quizzed on the Tea Party and not knowing.
I hear you.
Yeah. Well, I had a question about a month and a half ago. I was listening to your show, and really something you said really caught my ear.
Yeah.
You were saying that capitalism, you know, never fails. in the history of the world. You're talking about it, and you know when didn't when the government bailed out all these banks? Isn't that the failure of capitalism? And GM, and they bailed out all these people. I mean, wasn't that capitalism basically taking a nosedive and? You know, our tax dollars stepping in to...
Well, let me answer by asking you, has the system, did the failure, the temporary failure of these massive banks, did it end capitalism, or did we do what we always do in these cases, when profit is to be made as capitalism, when costs are to be absorbed, it's socialism. We, the people... Through our tax money, ostensibly, actually it's through borrowing from China, but eventually we're supposed to pay it off. We, the people, bailed out the big banks. So did capitalism fail? No. It's still alive and kicking and beating and slapping and stomping on everybody in this country. So no, I don't see that as a failure at all. A couple of banks started to fail, but capitalism stepped in and said, oh, no. We can't fail. We're too big to fail. Quick. Bail us out. And the American people did.
I looked at it like, well, you know, I remember you about a week later, you talked about another story about the sun solar or whatever it is over in China that in, you know, 1 year they've surpassed everybody in their production, that they borrowed a bunch of money and the Chinese government paid all the interest on the loan. Is that similar to what we did here? I mean, it seems like a socialistic, you know, way to, it seems like capitalism and socialism sort of working together.
Well, I wouldn't call China socialist at all.
Well, communist, I'm sorry.
Well, not even communist. There's a communist party that provides the leadership. But its economic system is more, it is raw capitalism, and it is developing this oligarchic class, not unlike the Russians have now. The Chinese haven't gone to the mobster model like China has. China might as well be a mafia-run country. But China is definitely not what you or I would recognize as socialist, and certainly not communist. It's a predatory form of capitalism in its rawest form. But it's state capitalism to a large extent, state capitalism, as opposed to when the Soviet Union was around, it was state socialism. Now you have state capitalism, I wouldn't say that the Chinese or socialists at all. Hey, we're coming up on a break. Ed, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. I'm sorry you got the hard question. We'll talk again. Take care, pal. We have a break coming that'll allow me to cough. I've got my once a year bronchitis. Probably from screaming. All right, stick around. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Tonight's entire program is sponsored by Liberty One Radio. If you want to hear this program on the air in San Diego, visit LibertyOneRadio.com, one-O-N-E, LibertyOneRadio.com, and support Liberty One Radio. It is the voice of freedom in San Diego. And our thanks to them for the sponsorship tonight. Prairie 2. Prairie 2. Writes, where are the jobs? Economists were predicting 90,000 new jobs had been created in October, but the real number was only 39,000, and we need 150,000 new jobs to keep up population growth. In simple terms, this 111,000 job shortfall is in terms of economic impact, similar to laying waste to a city of 250,000 with no plans to rebuild it. And this was a good month. The U.S. stock markets ignored the news since they have nothing to do with the real world. Free money from the Fed continues to feed their irrational exuberance. The New York Stock Exchange listed companies do more than half their business outside the U.S., but the rest of the world, with the exception of China, isn't doing so hot largely from all the new U.S. dollars being printed. But in fact, the big companies are still doing well as they continue to drive down wages and borrow money at a fraction of a percent interest. Makes it hard not to make money as long as there are more wage cuts to make and smaller competitors to target. The crocodile only grabs an animal it thinks it can drag under. And the thing about crocodiles is the more they eat, the bigger and hungrier they get. Since the total decriminalization of Wall Street's practices, the feeding has been good. The Republicans in Congress are those little birds that clean the teeth of the big crocs while they sun themselves on the riverbank, and nary a tear is shed. It's the victim's fault, you know. And about those economists that were wrong about the job numbers, they all seem genuinely shocked that the numbers weren't better from October. These are the same economists who have spent the last 30 years telling us how good Reaganomics is. The trickle-down will make you rich, told us what a good deal tariff-free imports are, and that the earth is flat, don't you know? This requires a level of detachment from reality that requires a firm belief in fairy dust to make their economic models work. In fact, they have gone completely over to slogans, and they don't even bother with those depressing models anymore. It works for them because, well, they still have good-paying jobs. PrairieNumeral2.com, if you want to go to his website. Maurice is in L.A. listening on XM. Hey, Maurice. Or I'm sorry, Al is in Maurice, Louisiana. Jesus, boy, did I get that screwed up. Oh, hello, Al.
Al, it's all cool, Mike. Yeah. How you doing tonight?
I'm all right.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I had a couple of things. I had a couple of statements and a question or two, maybe. But first off, I wanted to tell you that I really enjoy your show, although you totally depress me.
I depress myself.
Well, I mean, it's like, I think it's bad, and then some of the stuff you say just makes me think, oh, it's worse than I thought, you know? But, and I have to agree with you, but, you know, how are we going to get people to, wise up? I mean, what does it take? I mean, before it's too late, it may already be too late, you know? But, I mean, I've had some thoughts. I mean, hell, there's a site on the internet that says basically it's right in the Declaration of Independence, you know, about, if the government doesn't work anymore, you know, make a new government, which I agree with. But the, you know, theoretically, maybe even nonviolently. But I don't know. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are. I mean, I think you do a good job, and the other guys, you know, Tom, Ned, and Dave, and Mark. I mean, everybody's getting the word out, but I mean, it just doesn't seem to be catching, you know what I mean?
Well, I do know what you mean, and I've said it before several times on this program, Al, that there is a solution to all this, and I think, first of all, I don't think the government has failed us. I think our economic system predatory capitalism has devoured the country. It hasn't failed itself. It's still strong. Oh, just like that thing I just read from Prairie 2.
Oh, yeah.
They're like crocodiles. And as long as the crocodile is allowed to eat, it just gets bigger and more vicious and continues to eat. And I think we have the mechanisms in place, or we did, in our government with the checks and balances, the three branches of government, with the regulatory agencies that were designed for one purpose and one purpose only, and that was to protect the citizens of this country from what capitalism can and will do if it's allowed to. Capitalism, first of all, it's mindless. I don't mean to make it sound like it's some kind of a dragon or some kind of a beast. Just the effects of capitalism are like those of a dragon or a beast. But capitalism is only as predatory as the people who operate it. And the people who operate capitalism, i.e. the capitalists, don't give a damn if you live or die. As a matter of fact, under the right circumstances, they want you dead. If you're a soldier, they want you dead, because after you've made it safe for them to continue their predatory practices, then you come back from the war and you want this and you want that. And if you come back with your legs shot off, oh, Jesus, you want more and you want this. If you're a worker, capitalism wants you gone and replaced by somebody who's willing to work for a third or a fifth or an eighth or a tenth or a twentieth of what you'll work for. And best of all, they want a slave. And even better would be machines, robots. So capitalism is, if people are going to sit down and work out a system that would be the most vicious, painful, ugly, deceptive system possible, capitalism is what would be developed. Consequently, as far as I'm concerned, the solution is coming. It's a fork in the road, I see, Al. The left fork or the right fork, pick one. The left fork would be democratic socialism as what develops out of collapsing capitalism. The right fork would be a kind of a neo-feudalism or a fascist kind of society. And I realize fascism is more of a political system than an economic system, but it really isn't. Fascism is a marriage between corporatism or capitalism and the ruling class. And so we're coming to that fork in the road because we're getting to the point where people are not going to watch their children starve to death. People are not going to say, oh, okay, I'm sorry, I was on the transplant list, and now I have to die because I've been taken off the transplant list because the state of Arizona's decided that's how they want to save money and get out of the red ink is to kill my ass. Eventually, people are going to say, that's it. And I think when that is said, either one of two things will happen. Either there will be violent, bloody revolution in this country, and it will result in what happened in France in the 1790s, or there will be a peaceful refusal on the part of the 330 million citizens in this country to continue to participate. And on one given day, all Americans will sit down somewhere in their living rooms or on the freeways or in what factory jobs remain or in the offices or in the shopping malls, just all of a sudden they'll all sit down and say, that's it. That's enough. And at that point, maybe we will be able to move on to the next system of economic justice that is so desperately needed in this country. That's what I see. Al, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. It's difficult to talk about it. You know, it's that time of the year, Christmas, when I don't know how it is in your city, but here in Atlanta, the Atlanta area, the five or six over-the-air stations that have newscasts and news departments in the city vie with each other to see who can come up with the tear-jerkiest stories. And I say tear-jerker stories, not that I'm being a cynic. They are literally, they make your soul hurt. They make you cry when you watch them. stories of families, especially this Christmas and last Christmas, who are struggling just to stay intact, struggling to continue to feed themselves. And then you have this overarching perverted Christian holiday that has been utterly, utterly smashed and replaced with consumerism. So that the idea of the little Christ child and people gathering in silence and awe is completely in the toilet. The only thing left of this holiday is the commercialism, the gimme, gimme, get, buy, buy, spend, sell. And that makes it particularly poignant, especially for little kids who never had a say in this, or even adults who never had a chance to voice their opinion. The holiday is what it is, and it makes people feel miserable, especially when not only can they not go buy the latest stuff imported from China, but they're having a hard time feeding their children. For the hour, tonight's program is sponsored by Liberty One Radio. If you want to hear this program on the air in San Diego, and I hope you do, visit their website, Liberty One, O-N-E, LibertyOneRadio.com, and support them. Liberty One Radio is the voice of freedom in San Diego. If you listen to San Diego radio lately, LibertyOneRadio.com. Next hour, we're going to chat about something that has it really is kind of scary to me, but that may be because it's been around my whole life, pretty much. Well, not my whole life, but and it's happening again. I'm not talking about nuclear weapons, although it could be that serious. And also a chat about Michael Moore's latest. So stick around for that. Andy is in Englewood, Colorado, listening online. Hey, Andy.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm okay. You know, about as well as you, I guess, right, under the circumstances. I like the crocodile metaphor.
Yeah, that was a good one.
You inadvertently segued pretty well into what I want to talk to you about.
Okay.
I got Huffington Post in front of me. Headline, Julian Assange feels noose tightening as law enforcement closes in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, let me see, weren't there 11 dead guys and oil all over the Gulf of Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the noose closing in on BP?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, who's in charge here? Why is the U.S. government asking terms from British Petroleum while they have this worldwide noose tightening around Julian Assange? Who's in charge? Who's running this circus anyway?
Well, where's the noose tightening around Osama bin Laden?
Good question.
I mean, here we have Interpol. This is how bin Laden situation should have been handled 9 years ago. And it
was, they wanted to.
Yeah, and it wasn't handled in the way they're going after Julian Assange, because nobody ever wanted to capture bin Laden if he's still alive.
No, he's the perfect boogeyman.
Oh, sure. So rather than go after him, we invade two countries and have killed, counting our own people, we have killed probably, I don't pick a number, 800,000, a million. It's astonishing. I can't even think about it because the blood and death and murder and mayhem that represents is horrifying.
So who do they go after? Julian Assange.
Right, because, well, like like Michael said in one of his emails or his email tonight, you know, in a time when deception and lies and deceit prevail, to tell the truth is a revolutionary act. I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what it was. It was a quote from Orwell's 1984. So Julian Assange, and now I understand he has an entire hard drive off of one of the executive computers at Bank of America, and he is planning release of those documents in the spring, and apparently it's fairly devastating what's going to be revealed. So
they don't want that to happen.
No, not only do they not want it to happen, but you know, you cross the political machine, you're in danger. You cross capitalism, you cross capitalism, and you're going to die.
I believe you're right about that.
So I'm very, very worried about what's going to happen to Julian Assange. Now, a lot of people say, well, the best protection you have is to get everything out in public, like he has done. But tell that to the journalists in Russia who have been trying to expose the corruption and filth of Putin's regime. They keep turning up dead every time you turn around. Another Russian journalist, another newspaper editor or writer is found with his brain splattered against a wall. And, of course, the Russian government never know. Oh, yeah, we're going to investigate. And that's the last you hear of it.
Well, I haven't read all the stuff that he released, but I'll tell you this. Anybody who makes the machine that mad.
Yeah.
They got to be doing something right.
That's true. All right, well, thanks.
Just like you, Mr. Malloy.
Yeah, right. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.
All right, sir, take care. I've been reading it in little dribs and drabs. New York Times Daily has been, of course, they filter through it and present what they choose to present. I went to the website Irish Dave sent me to El País, the Spanish newspaper, their website, where document after document after document is available, and it's available in English. The language used on the web pages is Spanish, but the documents themselves are in English. And what El País is doing is just presenting it, presenting these documents as they actually appear. Very legible, very readable, but written in, for lack of a better term, typewriter-style script. You know what I'm saying? You know, like old typewriters. Like a lot of these cables were written on typewriters. So that's it. That's one of the places to go to where you can read so much of this stuff, but a lot of it is coming out in a way that is easy to digest. Of course, when someone else or some other organization does the selection process for you, you are going to read what they consider to be read-worthy. So it's always best, of course, to try to find a source other than the New York Times or other than El País or other than Der Spiegel. But keep looking, and the stuff keeps turning up. All right, stick around. When we come back, something that's on the radar right now that is particularly scary to me and probably to people of my generation, more so than, say, if you're under the age of 30. But let's see if I can scare the hell out of you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. back. I was just looking once again at this little bit about the Koreas. More on that in a second. This hour also, the entire Mike Malloy Show tonight, is sponsored by Liberty One Radio. If you want to hear Mike Malloy on the air in San Diego, visit LibertyOneRadio.com and support Liberty One Radio. That's all spelled out, Liberty One Radio. Liberty One Radio is the voice of freedom in San Diego. Thanks to them for sponsoring the program. LibertyOneRadio.com. Got a frog in my throat. South Korea. You know, there's so much that is going on while we are dissolving like wet tissue paper in this country politically. So much going on that is under normal circumstances would be really, 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 really dangerous and need a whole lot, a whole lot, a whole lot of attention by our political class. Because the non-political class in this country doesn't really pay any attention to politics. For most of us, it's just not visible. We don't care. You know, something comes up and we bitch and scream and run around with our hair on fire, but we don't pay any attention to the process. Most of us do not. And as a result, big decisions are made, and we stand around like sheep and say, bah, how did that happen? Bah, what? Where? I didn't know. Well, some of that is going on right now, and it has been going on, in case you weren't aware. The Korean War that began in 1950 and temporarily ended with an armistice, I think, in 1953. You know, it's never been ended. We are still technically at war with North Korea, as is the United Nations, in fact, because that was a so-called police action, a police action by the United Nations against the dirty commies of North Korea. Anyway, that's a long time ago. Dear God, that's 60 years ago. I mean, it's just like, hello? Hello? 60 years ago? Nothing happened 60 years ago. The entire Earth was a primordial swamp. 60 years ago, dinosaurs walked. Right? I mean, that's how most Americans consider 60 years ago. But the war between the United States, I know, it was a UN action. The war between the United States and North Korea has never been settled. And one of the reasons is because the leadership of both sides back in 1950 were insane. We were just coming out of World War II and had a new enemy, a big enemy, much bigger than fascism. Hell, a lot of capitalists in America supported fascism. They supported Hitler. That was a good idea. And put their money where their mouth was, like George W. Bush's grandfather. The whole Bush family was involved in supporting, watering, trimming, and tending to the rise of fascism, much like normal people would tend to their garden. Capitalism still wants fascism, and they almost got it. I mean, we are so close. But back in 1950, all of a sudden, whoops, what's this? They had assumed that communism was dead. And communism was not dead. As a matter of fact, in the 50s, communism was very much alive, spreading like a cancer over the earth. So you know the rest of the history. Anyway, the North Koreans, spurred on by communist revolutions post-World War II and by the Chinese crazy people, decided to reunify their country, Korea, after an awful lot of murder, bloodshed, death, and destruction perpetrated by the invasion of not just the Japanese, but the Korean Peninsula has been occupied so many times by so many different groups. You would think that the Koreans would just declare themselves to be somebody else, We'll be somebody. Okay, we'll be American. No, we'll be Japanese. No, let's just be Chinese. No, let's be, I don't know, who had us before those three did. Oh, woe is me. There's your history lesson on the Korean War. The Korean War has never been decided. And recently, what was it, a week ago, a couple of weeks ago, when all of a sudden the North Koreans unleashed with an artillery barrage and killed people in South Korea, a couple of soldiers, a couple of civilians. Uh-oh. Now, usually South Korea puts up with this. They put up with the crazy. And if any country or part of a country like North Korea has produced insane leadership, the Kim family that has ruled North Korea since its inception, father, son, and now grandson is being groomed. The Kim family is... They're mad as hatters. They're like the Bush family. They're just insane. They're totally, they're power crazed. They're megalomaniacs. If George W. Bush and George Herbert Walker Bush and Prescott Bush had been born on the Korean Peninsula, they would have done the same thing as the Kim family. Exactly the same thing. Exactly. But the Bush family were all born here. Family members were all born here. So their brand of totalitarianism and murderous activity has been slightly different. But I digress. The North Koreans have decided they want some more war. Not the North Koreans. The North Koreans don't decide anything. The North Korean people do not decide when they have to pee. That's decided for them by the dear leader. And the dear leader will tell people, you may go pee now. And God forbid any of them should pee before the dear leader tells them they may. Well, the South Koreans apparently have had enough. They are now vowing to bomb North Korea. Ta-da! If the North Koreans attack again. And in response to that, U.S. and Japanese forces are practicing for regional war. In their biggest ever joint military exercise, regional war. Isn't that a quaint term? Regional war. So, after 50 years, that's about how old the U.S.-Japanese alliance is, all of a sudden, dig this, the American military and the Japanese military are practicing war together to get involved in a regional war. Now, I don't know what that means, a region. That region is North Korea, South Korea, Japan, U.S. presence, China. All the bad places that we experienced in the 60s and 70s, Cambodia, Vietnam, Laos, regional war. Sounds like a board game, regional war. But here we are, the United States and Japanese forces, and there are people in this country... Old people in this country who, when they hear that phrase, U.S. and Japanese forces are practicing for regional war, are absolutely losing it into their diapers. Old men in their late 80s, early 90s, who fought against the Japanese 60 years ago, who are saying, what? We are allies. Well, of course. I mean, that's how the war games, the regional craziness happens. You know, look at the United States and Germany. Oh, my God. We'll be right back.
Progress is in megatons. Well, who's left when the war is won? A soldier of a misfortune. A soldier of an angry call. Soldiers on foreign soil. Well, we're not here to fight your war. We know what you're fighting for. Oh, oh, this world is not your toy. This world is a lot.
Hey,
Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Tonight's Mike Malloy Show is sponsored by Liberty One Radio. If you want to hear Mike Malloy on the air in San Diego, California, visit LibertyOneRadio.com. Liberty One Radio. That's spelled out, O-N-E. LibertyOneRadio.com and support Liberty One Radio. Liberty One Radio is the voice of freedom in San Diego. So, the Koreas. You know, here we go again. U.S. forces in Asia have been very busy in the aftermath of North Korea's artillery bombardment of the island last week, wherein people were killed. Today's drills are occurring off the coast of Japan and include the USS George Washington, which is either the largest or one of the world's largest nuclear-powered aircraft carriers. Now, the unusual part, there were restrictions placed by the Japanese government as, where concerned, nuclear-powered anything, especially weapons of war, near their island nation, given that they are the only people on Earth who were incinerated as a result of a nuclear attack. It's only happened once. On two, you know, two occasions, August 5th, August 8th, or was it August 6th and August 9th, 1945. So the Japanese have been extremely aware and sensitive to the ideas of nuclear weaponry being near their country. It certainly is understandable. But the threat, it appears, is so great in that part of the world that the United States and Japan are now participating in joint military war games that includes nuclear weaponry. Meantime, back here in the United States, John Kyle continues to, the senator, senior senator from Arizona, continues to tell the world to go F itself where it concerns anti-nuke treaty that is in need of re-ratification or renewal or whatever the hell it's in need of. John Kyle is the type of subhuman who wants to see nuclear war, whether it is, it doesn't make any difference where it is, preferably it'll be over there where all the non-white people live. But I digress again. More than 44,000 Japanese and U.S. military personnel are taking part in this week-long war game, along with 40 Japanese ships, 20 American ships, hundreds of aircraft. This is all according to the BBC. Japan's defense minister, Toshimi Kitazawa, said the drills were planned well in advance and, quote, are not targeting a specific country, end quote. He was quoted by China's Xinhua news agency. Not targeting a specific country. Ooh, wait till we get the WikiLeaks report on that one, right? We are not targeting a specific country. Well, of course not. We're just having war games with our good buddies, the United States, who incinerated 500,000 of our people with nuclear bombs. But we're all friends now. It's a new world. And in an unprecedented move, South Korean observers... That's what they're always called, observers. That's what we sent to Vietnam all those terrible years ago. Matter of fact, right about the time, the end of the Korean conflict, the active end of the Korean conflict, Eisenhower sent, was it Eisenhower or was it Truman? No, Eisenhower. Eisenhower sent observers, U.S. Marines, to be observers. What are we going over to observe? We're going over to observe the future. So, you know, observers, that's a term that means combat-ready forces are set to go. So South Korea has placed observers on hand, which is being interpreted as a sign of more regional cooperation in efforts to deter the bad old bloodthirsty North Koreans who just may come pouring over the 38th parallel as they did half a century ago, 60 years ago, with bloodlust in their eyes and Chinese manufactured weapons in their hands to destroy, utterly destroy their brothers and sisters south of the 38th parallel. It's madness, isn't it? Huh? Isn't this madness? It's crazy. It's crazy. But all this is going on. So anyway, a retired South Korean general, Kim Kwon-jin, no relation to the ruling party up north, I guess. Maybe so. I don't know. Who knows? He said at a parliamentary hearing the other day, quote, "If there are further provocations from the north, we will definitely use aircraft to bomb North Korea." Now, the retired South Korean general has been confirmed as the country's new defense minister. And this man, Kim Kwon-jin, said he would not hesitate to authorize a bombing campaign of the North if they attack again. And there was no immediate response from North Korea.
Supposed to be protecting me, storing every little file. Make a promise and take a while. Hooked up to a satellite, make sure the world's behaving right. I don't mean to bust your groove, think it's time we made a move. Freedom isn't free tonight.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Tonight's program is sponsored by Liberty One Radio. If you want to hear this program on the air in San Diego, visit libertyoneradio.com and support them. Liberty One Radio, the voice of freedom, the voice of freedom in San Francisco, in San Diego, excuse me, San Diego. Liberty, O-N-E, Radio, libertyoneradio.com. Check them out. Check them out. Did you happen to see Michael Moore's column the other day? Do you subscribe to his website where you get these emails? Huh? You do? Good. Imagine, Michael writes, if the U.S. Post Office had just shut down, leaving its almost 800,000 employees without a paycheck. And then imagine Walmart was planning to lay off two-thirds of its workers, 1.2 million people, by Christmas. What would they do? What would all these people do? And what would 2 million more people with no income do to a U.S. economy that is teetering on the edge as it is? Think about that. 800,000 people in the post office fired tomorrow. And then 1.2 million Walmart workers, two-thirds of their employees in the United States, all gone. What would people do? Well, as Michael Moore says, you don't have to imagine because that's the situation we're in as of midnight last night, two nights ago. Congress has failed to appropriate money for emergency unemployment benefits for 800,000 Americans, and another 1.2 million will be in the same boat by the end of December. They will have no income in the worst economy since the Great Depression. And there's no sign of hope on the horizon. As we mentioned earlier, the unemployment number went up again today. What to do? Michael Moore points out that these are not the 99ers, those who have exhausted 99 weeks of unemployment benefits. It's not them. There are approximately 3.5 million 99ers. The 2 million who are now falling through the safety net with them have been unemployed for fewer than 99 weeks, but Congress has refused to appropriate the funding for any benefits. Not Congress, the Republicans. The Republicans. Does nobody care about this? I said the other night, at what point do we have to get to before people start dragging Republicans into the street and pummeling them into pools of bruised flesh? I mean, this is madness. Michael Moore says, you don't care. You say you have a job and you don't want to hear about these millions of people who suddenly suffered from a mass attack of laziness starting in late 2008. Well, care about this. Without these 2 million spending their unemployment checks, up to another million people will likely lose their jobs, with the total effect stomping on whatever little momentum the economy has. You might be getting a sudden attack of laziness soon yourself. That's how the Republicans describe it. You're lazy. Get your ass to work. Unemployment compensation makes you lazy. How soon before Republicans are dragged into the street and pummeled and stomped? How long? It really concerns me, because they may be deranged Republicans, but they are my fellow Americans, my countrymen and women. And deep in my heart, I do truly love them because, well, you know, we're all Americans. I would hate to see this happen. But the Republicans are pushing us into a pummel Republicans frame. You feel it? So what do we do? Well, Michael Moore has a couple ideas. First things, find the contact information for your representative and call, fax, or write, or all three, demanding that they all, Democrats or Republicans, vote for the money for the needed benefits and tell Democrats to stand up to the Republican Senate blackmail where they're holding the unemployment hostage. Unless Democrats vote to extend Bush's tax cuts for the billionaires. And while you're at it, tell Congress to appropriate more money for the 99ers, too. There's no single action Congress could take that would help the economy more than putting money in the hands of people who spend it right away. You know, just waste it, as lazy people do, on things like food, clothing, shelter, gasoline, so they can go look for another job. You know, the kind of people that the Michelle Bachmans and the John Boners and the Eric Cantors and the rest of these slimy bastards insist are just lazy, stupid, give me a free ride Americans. Right? Huh? Number two, participate on December 7th. There's an interesting day. An historic day. On December 7th, participate in the AFL-CIO's Day of Solidarity with the long-term jobless. As Michael Moore points out, we're all in this together, and we'll either make it together or go down together. And you know damn good and well which way we're heading, right? I know a lot of people listen to this program and say, Malloy is always being so goddamn negative. That's all he talks about. I guess I could talk about happy stuff and continue to assist in the narcotizing or anesthetizing of as many people as I possibly could, like the Becks and the Limbaughs and the Hannitys do. I guess I could do that. Anyway, as Michael Moore says, if Congress decides to tell millions of Americans to shut up, go home, and die, well, we're going to end up at a destination even John Boehner and Mitch McConnell won't like very much. Michael Moore is amazed that his fellow Americans have taken everything as well as they have so far. But as Michael Moore points out, as I've pointed out, as a lot of people have pointed out, the people of every country who are going through this, I don't care if they were in Eastern Europe or Southeast Asia or Central America or South America, North America, every population has its breaking point, and we are getting close. So what to do? You know, the fact that we are just a couple of weeks away from the perversion, the celebration of the perversion of the Christian Savior's birth, the complete perversion, the complete mockery of that religious holiday. You know, Christmas, the great, you know, Black Friday and all that kind of stuff. Wherein the capitalists depend on an orgy of grabbing and gimme and busting down the doors and let me have it to continue to fuel this madness. And like I mentioned the other night, destroying the second most important Christian holiday by perverting it and polluting it with commercialism has worked one just magic for the capitalists. Magic. But all of a sudden, there's no money. What's going to happen? Oh, but Mike, I heard the other day that, you know, they moved Black Friday up to, I don't know, a couple of weeks early, and there was a lot of spending. Well, not a lot. There was some. I've heard people on television, MSNBC and CNN, saying things like, well, a pent-up buying urge in the American heartland is exploded and people are spending. What are they spending? Where are they getting the money? More credit card debt? What? I don't know. I have no idea. But this annual orgy where everybody joins in a complete perversion. Now, I'm an atheist, so this kind of stuff doesn't bother me, except from the standpoint of an observer. I listen to all the piety and all the craziness all year long by the so-called Christians. Oh, my goodness, let's do this. Oh, let's get Christ back in the schools. Let's put God here. Let's put God over there. Oh, post the Ten Commandments. But come the second most important day in the Christian theology, the birth of their Savior, and they are willing to completely pervert it, cheapen it, commercialize it, garbage it up. This year, as they attempt to do that, as they do every year, there's no money to assist in the garbaging up of the birthday of their avatar. So what's going to happen? I'll tell you what's going to happen. It adds to the sense of defeat and depression and anger and anxiety that's already run amok in this country. So what's going to happen? At what point, as Michael Morris said, as I've said, as other people have said, at what point do the American people have a collective freak out and the blood begin to run? Huh?
Let every heart prepare him room. Heaven and nature sing. Heaven and nature sing. Heaven and nature sing.
I decided not to comment on, during this hour anyway, on Obama's trip to Afghanistan. What difference does it make? It really doesn't make a bit of difference whatsoever. And once again, tonight's Mike Malloy program, the entire thing, sponsored by Liberty One Radio. If you want to hear this program on the air in San Diego, go to LibertyOneRadio.com and support Liberty One Radio. The one is spelled out, O-N-E. Liberty One Radio is the voice of freedom in San Diego. And thanks to that organization for sponsoring the program tonight. Now, what to do about all this? What? what to do? Malloy is always so negative. I've offered what I consider to be my solutions. It's one thing to sit and bitch and moan and complain, right? I understand. But I have offered up solutions. I have come forward with what I consider to be just amazingly good ideas, partly because I've seen them work. Well, I haven't seen them work, but I've read in history that they've worked. And I'm referring to Works Project Administration, the WPA, that was put together back in the bad old days of the really big depression, the one that we are heading into. Well, the one we're heading into is going to make the depression of the 30s look like, oh, I don't know, a workers' holiday. But I've offered up my solution. And I think it's a damn solid one and a good one because it has historical precedent. It has worked before. This country is rotting from the inside. I'm talking about the physical structure of the United States. It's rotting from the inside. Pick any aspect of our physical infrastructure, any aspect at all, whether it's sewers, water systems, electrical grid, bridges, dams, roadbeds, schools, post offices. Pick one. Pick one. They are all falling apart. And what's the solution? Well, the solution is for the government to declare, for Barack Obama to declare, a works project that will be monumental. It will put tens of millions, you heard me right, tens of millions of people to work. Everybody from ditch diggers to engineers to the electrical engineers, mechanical engineers, bridge builders, construction people, everybody goes to work. And when those people go to work, then everybody else goes to work. Car salesmen, waitresses, right down the line. And because we live in a society where we tax ourselves in order to pay for everything, tax revenue goes up. This is so goddamn simple. And I get furious because nobody will do it. And I don't have the power to do it. So the government stops appropriating money to vampiric organizations like these filthy sons of bitches on Wall Street. And gives the money to small businesses and large businesses that begin the massive rebuilding of the American infrastructure. Oh, my God. Jobs. More jobs than could possibly be filled. We would be asking our Canadian neighbors to come down and take jobs if this were done. And nobody does it. Nobody is doing it. And then the second thing, and this is even more important, is the initial stages of democratic socialism to be instituted into this country as a replacement for the murderous, pro-death, destructive, end-of-the-world capitalism that we're now dealing with. Come on. Come on. Five industries need to be nationalized as quickly as possible. Banking. Oh, my God. It should be nationalized. The same way if you deal business with a credit union, you're doing business with a socialistic banking structure. It is owned by the depositors. It's secure. Nationalize banking. Nationalize energy production. No more oil companies. Unless they're owned by the people. No more coal mining companies unless they're owned by the people. Nationalize it. And then start phasing out the ones that are destroying the planet. Healthcare. Yeah, there's no point in me saying anything about that. Single payer, Medicare style healthcare. Do it tomorrow. Transportation. That works hand in hand with rebuilding of the infrastructure, railroad beds to handle high-speed bullet trains. An improvement of everything that has to do with transportation. I'm not talking about transportation companies. I have lots of privately owned trucking companies. But transportation, national, rail, airlines, shipping, nationalize it. The people own it. Weapons production. That's the big one. Trillions of dollars that go to weapons, that go to instruments of death and destruction, nationalize it, and then get rid of it, murder it, kill it, stop it. Follow Eisenhower's advice. Smother it, end it. Oh, then because we live in a predatory world, keep, oh, I don't know, 100 nuclear weapons all shiny and bright and ready to go in case some crazy son of a bitch like who, oh, I don't know, North Koreans decide to attack us. So there you go. There's the solution. So simple, so easy. I'm willing to sign on tomorrow. How about you, huh? I'll see you Monday. You have a nice weekend. And Kevin Kenny, have a great weekend wherever you are. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.